Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 3rd of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Wayne McCurry. We had JSC Resorts, RB Platinum, and of course, Massmart Update. Chatting with Craig Antonio from Anbro Capital. Online retail sales reverting back to the pre-pandemic trend. We didn't get that pull forward everyone had hoped for. And then Bianca Botas from Citadel Global. Asset swaps, do they still have a space in our investment world? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Still looking for a soft landing. A great article by Isaac Odendahl. He says definitely risks in the market, but also opportunities. Business Day, Treasury needs to take half of Eskom debt. It will take our overall debt to GDP up about 2.5 percentage points. Thing is, I mean, I don't know what the other better plan. I don't like the idea, but their debt is there and Eskom can't pay it. Morning markets, lots of red. US, we had S&P down 0.2%, Nasdaq off almost 0.3%. Asia's mixed. We got Sydney down 0.4%, Tokyo up 0.5%. Commodities are mostly down. Gold, $1,784. Brent, $100.19, slightly green overnight. Platinum, $893, and palladium, $2,093 an ounce. Rand, $16.76. Top 40 opening call, about 60 points to the green. That's 0.1%. That is 10 cent trades up, just over 2.5% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCurry. You find him, of course, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, appreciate the early morning. We're starting to get some results coming through. We're getting some trading updates. Royal Buffer King Platinum with their 6 months results. I mean, what struck me with it is that the in terms of production, they actually got a little more production, but of course they're being hurt by prices down, and we should expect this, particularly considering the levels PGMs and other commodities were in the first half of last year.
Yeah, look, I mean, basically all the platinum companies' earnings are halved, more or less. You know, but it's still very good earnings. I mean, even when you look at halved earnings, the return on equity is phenomenally high. And platinum's the one sector that I really like longer term, because other commodities, if the price goes high enough, there's, you know, there's reserves to bring on, there's new mines to build, there's increased production, where that's not the case in platinum. So, you know, the established players will continue over a cycle or through a cycle, get these very high return on equity. So you're still getting a dividend. The companies are still cash flush. Balance sheets are very, very strong. It's just a cycle, though. You know, you are going to get these things.
Yeah, I take your point in it. I mean, it looks scary. You know, headline earnings per share down 58.1%. Man, they still made almost $8 a share, and this is only for the first 6 months. JSC results, I got to say, the trading update, which came out, towards the end of June, surprised me how strong it had been. It was a good set of numbers, and I suppose, you know, we go back. I mean, obviously, the war in Ukraine started in February. We had volatility. The JSC, as the exchange, loves that.
Yes, and also, I mean, you must remember that they've had in the last 6 months absolute, you know, multi-year record highs on the market, and their game is a RAND volume game. You know, if the index goes up, even if your volume stays the same, your revenue goes up in line with the index. So it's actually quite similar to an asset manager. You know, it's really a punt on what the market's going to do, but I suppose a JSC in particular is the amount of trade that goes through. And we all know up until the war and up until the big inflationary scares, market was good, eh?
Yeah.
And now with Naspers and Prosus buying back shares and all of that, I mean, there's big volumes.
Yeah, I hadn't actually thought of that. Of course, Naspers and Prosus are shifting huge amounts through the market every single day. The last one was an update from Massmart. Yeah, it remains tough for them. I mean, margin pressure, and I quote, cost inflation outpaced sales inflation. They are struggling. They're not they are struggling.
Yeah. Look, when you look at the sales numbers and you take out the discontinued operations, sales growth isn't bad. And then when you adjust for same store sales, the sales growth is okay. You know, it's reasonable. But then it's margin pressure.
Yeah.
Huge margin pressure. And everyone's suffering from margin pressure except the clothing retailers and some of the other retailers, but specifically the clothing retailers, because there's no inflation in their inputs, really. You know, they don't suffer massively from cost inflation. So they're doing extremely well, but everyone else is suffering from essentially 7, 8, 9% inflation in their margins, and they can't pass it on. You know, AVI has, even AVI, that's normally good at passing on prices, couldn't get it right, and they also suffered margin pressure.
Yeah, it's a good point. AVI is probably best known for many things, but they protect their margins like nothing, and they were unable to. That's how tough it is. Wayne McCurry, yeah. F&B Wealth and Investments, as always, appreciate the early morning insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Craig and Tony, CIO at Anbro Capital. Craig, appreciate the time. It was last week, Shopify were doing a series of layoffs, and I was reading the CEO letter, as I often do, I suppose. But what really struck me with it was the chart he put included in the post. He talks around the sort of pull forward we saw during the pandemic when we were locked down and online shopping, and it was broader than that. It was Netflix, it was everyone, really benefited. And it looked like that growth trajectory had leaped forward a couple of years. Some folks said 5, some said 10 years. But the Shopify letter saying, no, actually, it's reversing back to sort of going back to the mean. Your sense, I mean, is that a fair take, or perhaps is this an isolated issue more just for Shopify?
Well, hi there, Simon. Thanks again for having me. Always happy to be here. I think it certainly seems like it was a trend that sort of sped up and then has started reversing. And it's probably true for both online as well as general retail. You know, if one looks at, you know, the numbers we've received lately from the likes of Walmart and Target as well, you know, they're all saying there's been like a stimulus and a pandemic flush that's basically coming out of the system. Now, you know, if you look at e-commerce as a percentage of retail sales going into the pandemic, you know, it was growing at about 14% per annum on average. Mm-hmm. We then had a very big spike during COVID. And ever since then, it's been trending back to that 14% level. I mean, if you look at it in absolute terms, it was about 11% of total retail sales going into the pandemic, and then shot up to about 16.5% at its peak. And now it's back down to around about that 14.3% level. So, you know, over a two-year period, it's pretty much shot up and come back down, but he's still in line with the long-term average growth rate.
Yeah, I suppose that's an important point. And also, it's going to be, I mean, you know, Shopify is, I mean, they're kind of like an Amazon for private individuals, in that I can take whatever it is I sell and use Shopify as a platform. Etsy's would be another example, though there you're kind of using their warehousing in a sense. It's not that growth has gone, it's just that it accelerated. Everyone had a really great 2020, to a lesser degree a 2021, and now some normalcy returning, and it's back to, as you mentioned, what is 14% a year? Good growth anyway.
Yes. So I think, I mean, clearly it does seem as if that sort of COVID spike has proven to be a bit of a blip. And I mean, what we saw into that spike was companies were put under quite a lot of pressure. You know, they decided to ramp up on a whole lot of things when it came to expenditure. And you see that in the Shopify numbers that were out late last week. General and administration expenses were up 85% on the prior year. R&D expenses were up 100%, sales and marketing up 63%. So they took a decision to ramp up that expenditure to make sure that they remained relevant to their clients and to the market. But clearly that then coincided with a pretty quick slowdown, you know, back down to the mean. And as a result, you know, the numbers have been hit quite hard on the back of that.
And we see it, I mean, again, and it's across industries. I mean, there's headlines out towards the end of last week, Amazon is sort of reducing their staff count by, I think it was 99,000 people. I suppose a lot of companies really sort of boomed up for that period and perhaps overcapitalized. And in some cases, it is going to mean staff layoffs. And of course, if you're bigger, if you're Amazon, I imagine this is probably an easier thing to swallow, notwithstanding they're still laying off some staff.
Yes, for sure. I think, the problem you have is, in the back of my mind, I think to myself, perhaps CEOs at some point knew this may be the case. But the problem you would have is that, the alternative might have been worse. In a market that's so competitive, if you have a massive rush in demand and you don't have product or capacity or something like that, clients just go elsewhere. So they probably did what they had to do to ensure they kept their competitive positioning. And now when things start normalizing, they obviously look a little bit bloated. And now they need to lean back a little bit. And to your point, Amazon cutting back some staff, Shopify announcing 10% of their workforce is now going to be cut as well.
Yeah, I take your point. They were almost between a rock and a hard place. They couldn't do anything. But if they did do something, there was a risk they end up here. A quick last point. I mean, we're seeing earnings seasons come through. You've mentioned some of them. But look at the big guys. I mean, the Apples, the Amazons. I mean, we can even throw Alphabet and Microsoft in there. I suppose the non-social media to a large degree. The results have been fine. I mean, they're not shooting out the lights, but all things considered, such as a tough economy, such as rising rates and inflation and the like, these companies are doing great. And I mean, Apple, growth was what, single digit, but still it had the best quarter ever.
Yes, and I think the important thing to realize, and it's something we sort of focus on quite acutely here, is that the growth rates may have slowed down, but they are still growing. Yes. And that growth is off arguably, a considerably higher base, because you've had this whole COVID pull through for a lot of companies. So the ability to still grow after having a year or two of massive ramp up, I think shouldn't be lost on investors out there. So yes, the rates have slowed, but they're lapping some pretty heavy, comp numbers in the prior year or two. And you'll probably only find, I guess, a year or so from now, that you'll get sort of normalized growth rates again once things get to a sort of steady state.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, they're comparing to Q2 of last year where yes, we had some vaccines, but we were broadly still locked down. And a quick point, I mean, that's something that you and I have chatted before. When you're looking at tech investments, I'm thinking particularly your unicorn fund, you want that runway. You're not looking for the, one quarter wonders. It's, can this company grow over many years at a sustained rate?
Yes, exactly right. And if you look at something like Shopify as a case in point, I mean, they obviously operate as a facilitator of retail, if you like, and e-commerce. Now, to put this into context, I guess, the retail market in the SA retail sell, I'm sorry, in the USA is a roughly a $6 trillion market on an annual basis. This market has grown at an average rate of just under 5% per annum for the last 30 years. Now, e-commerce as a portion of that is growing at roughly 3 times the pace of total retail sales. And that's really the space where, these e-commerce providers like Shopify, really play. Now, Shopify reckon, their total addressable market is about $153 billion. And their sort of share of that market at the moment is simply 3%. It's still very, very low. So the opportunity is massive. I mean, they're spending a lot of money to make sure they can capture that. And one thing we're watching quite closely is the big investment they're putting into their fulfillment network.
Yeah.
And if you get that right, I mean, that could really be a game changer for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I take the point. It is a, online shopping is just massive. And I know my trends have changed. And yes, I'm doing less of it, but I'm still out there and probably doing more sort of year on year as time moves on. Leave it there. Craig and Tony, CIO, Embro Capital, appreciate the time. Chatting with Craig there, that's our question on our LinkedIn and Twitter account. Growth returning back to normal, which is, as Craig says, 14% trend. I suppose the question is, should we be worried about this? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Bianca Boitis, a director and treasury partner at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time today. Asset swaps, which I think a lot of folks have perhaps sort of heard about, but I think are maybe not completely au fait with exactly what they are. Give us a sort of high-level view of what asset swaps are and how they would work within a portfolio.
Good afternoon to you and the listeners, Simon. When we start looking at an asset swap, I think the most understandable way to explain them is an instrument that allows an investor to buy foreign currency with rands as a long-term investment or as a short-term hedge. The mechanism by which a financial institution's capacity to invest offshore is utilized by the South African resident or underlying company, and that institutional investor then takes the money and invests it on behalf of the South African. It's basically and simplistically put an agreement between an investor and a financial institution with asset swap capability, where the institution holds an offshore asset on behalf of a South African investor.
So we then get that offshore exposure. You mentioned long or short term. So these aren't necessarily fixed duration.
No, it's really up to the underlying investor how long they would like to hold those foreign assets. And it's used by South Africans who want to get foreign exposure without actually converting rands into dollars. And it can also be used by companies who know that they've got upcoming exposure to make use of an hedge without actually externalizing the funds up front.
And the assets offshore, I mean, obviously these could be traditional listed equity. Could it be broader than just the traditional equity?
Yes, it can. So basically what the asset swap provider or the financial institution with asset swap capability would do is they will go and invest these funds in a fund that's already approved and listed on their platform, for instance. Mm-hmm. And this can range from collective investment schemes to plain bank accounts holding cash to offshore equity.
Okay, so it could be as simple as a bank account in that sense. And then the unwinding process, I suppose, is you would contact the institution who's helped you set up and say, can we unwind? And I mean, there will be a process, but it's not going to be sort of months and months. It's going to be a fairly smooth and swift process.
It's a very easy process. So once you're in this asset swap and now you want your rands back, because let's say for argument's sake, you've obtained your Reserve Bank approval, and you now want to take that money offshore in your own capacity, the asset swap provider will go and sell those dollars. And what we at Citadel Global then do is we actually manage that whole process by saying, okay, the asset swap provider needs to sell dollars. The underlying client needs to directly buy dollars. So we make sure that that happens at exactly the same time, eliminating foreign exchange risk. And the client actually breaks even in terms of a forex position.
Gotcha. So in essence, it's back to back. So you're not going to take any risk on that part of the process. Legalities, I'm assuming that Reserve Bank and SARB are perfectly happy with this.
They are perfectly happy with this. And this actually gives the client the opportunity to hedge their exposure while they are waiting for certain Reserve Bank and SARB processes to be completed. For instance, if a client is looking to externalize more than his annual allowances, he's obtained his tax clearance certificate, but now he needs to, let's say, wait 6 to 8 weeks for the Reserve Bank approval to exceed that 10 million rand allowance, but he's concerned about the rand blowing out and his actual risk that he has in the forex market, then he can go into an asset swap, protect himself against forex volatility. And then once that Reserve Bank approval is issued, he can unwind the asset swap, buy the forex outright, and externalize in line with Reserve Bank approval processes.
And this is a good point. This stands outside of our 10 million limit. So it's not just whilst waiting for approval. It might be if I could, for example, move 3 years of money offshore and then every year take a year's amount and sort of actually do it via the proper, during the normal process rather than the asset swap process.
Absolutely.
We'll leave that there. That's Bianca Boitis, Director and Treasury Partner at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time today. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Perkley Radenhuis around the NASDAQ, up some 15%, in fact, closer to 17% since those lows of mid-June. The question we asked you on our LinkedIn and Twitter is, will we see a pullback from here? Just over a third of you said, yep, new lows are coming, and those are a long way down. But hey, bull market rallies are real. Just over half said, yeah, but only a little bit, not a massive pullback, whereas a fifth of you were saying, nope, we're going onwards and upwards. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb websites and app, 6:30 a.m, podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're talking changes to total return ETFs.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.